Session number 11449, rule 3.
Squadron leader down rule 3.
They used to walk about an assortment of Italian uniforms, anything but their own Air Force equipment. Army desert boots, which I must say I wore myself, because they were lovely, comfortable things to wear, big rubber soles, so it was comfortable walking on the sand and hard rock. They were full of fun. They were marvellous in the air. If they saw you in trouble, they used to flock round you like a swarm of birds to get you out of trouble. But on the ground, they like to be left alone. One of the things, and they could be left alone, one of the things that Menzies, the Australian Prime Minister, arranged with Churchill when he agreed that the Australian Air Force, or part of it, could go to the Western Desert, was that they must always be supplied with fresh vegetables. So we always had three-ton trucks charging up and down the 500 miles between Cairo and us at Gambit with fresh vegetables. And of course there used to be barrels of beer and every drink brought to the mess as well. And that made the eating more interesting than it was always the everlasting bully beef. But you at least had fresh potatoes and green stuff. And, of course, we had drink, alcohol and non-alcoholic drinks. The three-tonner trucks used to be on the go all the time. This was the arrangement between Churchill and Menzies. This was to happen to the Australian troops. And so I was lucky there. And, of course, the various members of the Desert Army, 7th Armoured Division, 13th Corps, used to pop in and see us. The odd tank used to suddenly arrive outside. It was called the pilot's tent. It wasn't called you didn't have segregated officers and NCO messes. You had a pilot's tent where you were with flight sergeants as well as the commissioned officers, and of course there was a sergeant's mess, but they shared it with the corporals. But the various members of the long range desert group in their little armored carriers used to find one outside the tent having a quiet sip. Of course, they knew we had it. We made a change from rather nasty, tasty water.
Did you do much flying in the Western Desert yourself?
I didn't do a great deal, no. I didn't do a great deal.
What kind of targets were your pilots mostly operating against?
They only used to take off if there was an actual raid on Tobruk or on an aerodrome, and they weren't large formations at all. When I was with the squadron, which was only for a few months because I became ill, the pores in my skin gave up, and instead of the sweat coming through, they used to form big blisters over my face, all the exposed parts, legs and so on. This was a continual sunshine, the heat, and I had to go to hospital, where the only cure was to sit in front of fans. There was no other cure. was the Air Force Hospital in Cairo. But anyway, to come back, they weren't large raids that I'd been used to in during the Battle of B. They used to be pairs of German aircraft used to do little. Well, it was shooting up the main road, really. It's the coast road. The army convoys and things with ammunition and the rest of it.
So you were defending that?
Yes, that was one's main activity. It was some nuisance raids, just coping with nuisance raids. Yes, yes.
What were the losses to the squadron like?
Well, during the battle that finished up at Alamein, when Auchinleck was in charge, the big retreat, the losses were very heavy. But I was with the ground staff, taking them back with the remnants of the army, and we had practically no aircraft left at all. In fact, I think we left them all behind. They were just wiped out, both by air and by German tanks. It was a big retreat. Very big retreat. Never seen anything like it. I mean, once the army got on the go backwards, it went jolly fast.
And a lot of equipment was left behind.
Yes, all of it. Mind you, we had a lot of. Each squadron had its own quantity of allotment of vehicles. I mean, everything was mobile. Your stores was mobile. My office was mobile. The adjutant's office was mobile. I mean, all that motored back. But I mean, your fuel and water and unserviceable aircraft. All left behind.
Where did you go back to?
Cairo. In the hospital.
And the squadron? Where did the squadron go back to?
Well, that had to be reformed, but I don't know what happened to it then, because I was 6 weeks in hospital, and then I was sent to Immobilia Buildings in Cairo, they were, to await a boat to bring me home. And when I was allocated a berth, it was in the French liner called the Ile de France. And that I had to transship at Durban. I had to get out at Durban and await another boat. And that was the P&O Strathaird. And it was a long, slow journey back home.
This was in September 42?
Yes.
Did you meet the enemy on the way?
No, fortunately, because we were all alone at sea.
I think, going back to the Battle of Britain days, you've got one or two remarks you can make about the station commanders that you had at North Weald and Biggin Hill.
Yes, I should like to record that the although the early part of the active part of the war, we had two excellent station commanders. One was Bunty Frew, who finished up as an Air Chief Marshal, and the other was Paddy O'Neill. Really, the most interesting to me was Wing Commander Beamish, because he had great courage and great initiative, and he could see at the height of the battle that a number of us were getting a little weary and tired.
This is at North Weald.
This was at North Weald. And so he gave instructions that squadrons were only to fly 9 strong. that meant they were not to fly, if they could produce all the aircraft, 12 strong, which meant that the section of three could always have fourth day free from duty. And this he used to enforce rigidly, regardless of any crisis or drama. And in my case, on my day off, which came round, as I've just said, every fourth day, I used to get in my car, nip up to the West End of London, and join one's favourite girlfriend at the time, and we used to enjoy ourselves at our favourite hostelries, nightclubs and that sort of thing, and then one used to drive back to North Weald through Epping Forest, then used to take 40 minutes from the West End back to North Weald in the early hours of the morning and be on duty again at 3 a.m. The other interesting station commander I met was Group Captain Soden, Mongoose Soden, he was his nickname, who I met in Cairo when he was spending some leave there, as he was station commander at Sheikh Osman at Aden, having been posted there under a cloud by fighter command, because when he was station commander at Biggin Hill, he considered his hangars there were unsafe, having received many bombs and roofless. He decided to blow them up, blast them to the ground. This was not approved of by his superiors at fighter command, and he was immediately posted to Sheikh Osman at Aden. He was a most entertaining character, and at the end of the war he retired early and resided in South Africa.
Did he seem chastened about being punished for blowing up the hangar?
No, he was extremely jolly and very amusing.
How did he spell his surname?
S-O-D-E-N, Soden.
How did he come to be called Mongoose?
Well, he was rather portly. I don't know why, but that was his name. His nephew, Ian Soden, was my flight commander in 56 Squadron.
And he blew up the hangars in the Battle of Britain period?
Yes.